Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So you know how we often have a brain fog blooper on the show, a blooper or two? I've decided we should have a new category for the daft things that teenagers do. We need a name for it. I'm thinking teen brain farts. Do you like that idea?
I don't know whether I can use the word fart out loud.
Okay.
Upsets me slightly. It's like when their brain just goes so contrary, opposite and wrong, and they
do
the most illogical things.
Yes.
That anyone looking at them would
exactly.
say, don't do that.
Exactly.
What's
well, I've got a good example.
House?
This is what set me off. So teenage son, 18, to get the end of the ketchup out of the ketchup bottle, he decided to use a windmill action with his arm, swinging his arm, arm's length, swimming the ketchup to create a sort of centrifugal, you know, movement.
I think I know
of the
where
start
this
ketchup.
Is going.
Of course, the lid wasn't on. So the ketchup, the remaining ketchup, all over the ceiling in the kitchen, all over the walls in the hall. It made it out the hall, on the windows at the end of the kitchen, everywhere.
So and like that course, scene from Carrie.
It was a bit red and bloody and very sticky. And of course, was just left in that city.
Yes.
Anyway, teenage brain fart. That was one of them.
Oh my God, the list will be huge. We had one leave the milk off, the lid off the milk the other day. And then come in and knock the milk, 4 pints of milk all over the floor and shouting, who's left the lid off the milk?
Oh,
that really accusatory way they have.
Yeah.
Idiots.
So that's just two lid ones to get started with. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to Postcards from Midlife. I'm Trish Halpin.
And I'm Lorraine Candy. And we're on a mission to help you make the most of your magnificent midlife. We'll be tackling everything from mind and body wellness to HRT and your sex drive. Trish and I are here to help you have a stylish second act and answer all your midlife questions on fashion, beauty, careers, relationships, family, and as always, the challenges and joys of parenting teens.
Before we get into the delights of this week's episode, I feel I need to get something off my chest, Lorraine, because as anyone who's listened to my forest bathing exploits a few episodes ago will know, I'm trying to shake off being a bit too judgy all the time.
There is a little tendency you have, but this is a safe space to share, and I'm not going to mock you. Well, I might mock you a little bit. This does sound quite juicy, Trish, because you are a highly sensitive person, as we know, and it takes barely anything to set you off, doesn't it? What's happened to ruffle your feathers this week, my delicate one?
Well, I was in the gym changing room this morning, in fact, after my swim, and I saw a woman sitting on one of the stools in front of a mirror, you know, doing the makeup and the blow dry, of course, all very well and good, but she was in a thong.
Oh, you don't like that.
So, of course, I go into full judging mode about the inappropriateness of sitting on a public seat in a piece of cheese wire. I mean, too much flesh in contact with the plastic acrylic cover, I'm thinking. I mean, so am I being a total prude here, or do you think that's appropriate gym changing room etiquette? Is it even hygienic?
I wouldn't choose to do it myself. I wouldn't choose to wear a thong either. You're going a bit... Marion on me, Trish, do you remember?
Marion.
She's the listener who emailed us with lots of disapproving things to say about our chats. Do you remember she said this was just two women talking rubbish on a podcast?
She
listened all the way to the end,
yes!
But it was two women talking rubbish. I do think I agree with you on the thong, but if you are getting a bit judgy, I think we're going to label you Marion from now on. That'll nip you in the bud on the judgment. I'll say, do stop that, Marion.
Okay, all right. It's a bit like having a safe word, but without the kinky sex, isn't it?
What are you talking about now? You've gone Joan and Jericho on me. This is not the kind of chat I wanted to hear. Marianne would not like this.
No, she wouldn't watch it. Okay, let's get things back on track and share what we've got coming up in today's episode. We have not one, but two guests, because we are officially rolling out the red carpet for Olivier Award-winning actress and, dare I say, national treasure, Juliet Stevenson, who will be here with performer, podcaster and campaigner Nikki Clark to tell you about their new campaign, Acting Your Age, highlighting that the entertainment industry should have an equal representation of men and women over the age of 45 on our screens, because it is woefully lacking. It just doesn't take much to work that out, does it?
Well, you know, I'm very fired up about this one because all this patriarchal bullshit really gets on my nerves. So it's good to see two brilliant women sorting it out yet again.
Yes, I think we might need a name for your cross alter ego. So if I'm judgy, prudish Marianne, what do you think? What could you be? I'm sort of a Millie Tant from Viz is springing to mind. Do you remember that?
Millie Tant. I feel like she was the sexually frustrated feminist from Viz. Yes, I quite like the idea of that. There has been satire around me before. Do you remember Private Eye wrote that? I used to write a column.
Yes.
Ironically called, I don't know how she does it, in the Daily Mail, and Private Eye said, I don't know why she bothers to write this, from what they called it, the Daily Mail. So we'll have postcards from midlife with Marianne and Millie Tant, won't we?
I think so. I think that's good. But listen, listen, everybody, if this is all going a bit off the rails, we're going to be getting very jolly shortly, as we'll be having a jibber jabber about music, the tracks that get us up on the dance floor, our midlife anthems and playlist favourites, because we've both been out burning up the dance floor lately, haven't we? And it wasn't necessarily a pretty sight, but we certainly enjoyed ourselves.
Did you say burning up the dance floor?
Burning up, that's very 70s.
I don't know where that's come from, lodged in your subconscious there. I'm actually really good at dancing, Trish.
Oh, yes, I know you are. Yes, it's quite a sight. It's quite a sight.
Anyway, I'm going to keep my spectacular moves to myself and talk about something else spectacular, because we've been overwhelmed, haven't we, by our recent announcement that we're going to be bringing Postcards from Midlife to life with a live festival of fabulousness taking place next May on the 19th and 20th, May 19th and 20th, at the Business Design Centre in London. I've made Marianne a little special invite. And Trish, have you made a note of the date? Because when we did the launch video, you got it wrong, which is very Marianne of me to point out, isn't it?
Yes, I did. It was a brain fog blooper, but you can't be perfect all the time, can you? As much as I try my very hardest. Anyway, I think we should give a quick shout out to everyone on the Facebook group who have sent such lovely comments and are making plans to attend already, especially Elizabeth, who is hoping to come all the way from Norway.
That's very exciting. And we'll be delighted. We'll have a special welcome for Elizabeth and a special prize perhaps for our most far-flung visitor, perhaps a listener from Sydney might want
to
come along.
Yes, we do have them in Sydney, down under.
Mm-hmm. Or we could have one of Margot's alien cat friends in outer space, because you know my theory about Margot, she's just waiting for the mothership to come back.
Yes,
and get her.
They might come down for our festival, especially
wearing their big fur coats. Yes. Right now, though, we are in the early days of planning, and we're asking you to register your interest in attending. And if you want to do that, the website postcardsfrommidlifelive.com is live, so sign up there and our events team will get back. Did you hear that, Trish? I said events team. Our events team.
I know, we're very important.
We'll get back to you with ticket prices and packages very, very soon. And we're going to be updating every week on the podcast here and on our private Facebook group with more info as and when we get it, because we do have quite a lot of exciting things planned. Nothing for the Margos, though, of this world.
Meow. Now, as neither of us is expecting an invitation to Desert Island Discs anytime soon, we thought we'd bring you some of our favourite music anyway, inspired by some brilliant nights out we've both had lately, some blasts from the past, and the tracks that give us the feels, as the young folks say. Can we start with your Frenzy last Friday?
Oh, my goodness.
Lots of nice alliterations there. I'm dying to hear all about that. What happened? Tell me.
I must name drop first, obviously.
Of course.
Joe Wiley is a friend of mine who I know from Cornwall, weirdly enough, because we both from go to the same part. But anyway, she runs these 90s anthems nights, where she DJs all around the country. Now, if you want to go into a room with at least 500 women, roughly your age, and it was mostly women, dancing to bangers, as my daughter calls them, from the 90s that you used to dance to when there was less of you dancing, as it were, this is it. Go to a Joe Wylie 90s anthem night. We went to Froome because we wanted to have a night away, five of us. Absolute brilliant fun. And from the moment she played Bittersweet Symphony from the Verve, she came on to that.
We had
goosebumps.
Anthem. Yeah.
Off we went. And I had forgotten some of the anthems, but my favourite one of the night that was the Tori Amos one, Professional Widow. You don't even know.
Oh, no, of course I do.
Gotta be big. Yes. Gotta be big. Don't know the words, but it was just
mumble along.
Honestly, the whole room went mad for it. And then there was that Wild Child one, back once again with the Renegade Master. All of those songs that I used to go to Cream in Liverpool with my friends who were all Liverpudlian lawyers. And we used to just dance to them all night. Just fantastic. I would highly recommend a night out dancing with your best mates. We were a bit tipsy, obviously. And we couldn't get in our rooms because we got all our keys mixed up. But it was just absolutely brilliant. Where did you go to dance back in time?
Well, my flailing around was at a birthday party, actually, but it was such a beautiful, hot, sunny evening. It was in the south of France. Can I say that? A bit posh, sorry, but it was. It was in the south of France. Luxury birthday friend. And we were all on this terrace and it was just so gorgeous. It was so warm, the moon was up. And then the music started playing and it was just really brilliant, brilliant dance music. Now, you know me, it doesn't take much to get me dancing.
Nothing, Trish. I mean, the first beat of any Diana Ross and you're literally out there, aren't you? Even if you're nude, you're out there.
I was nude this morning in the bathroom doing Moving On Up, because that was on Radio 2, was dancing to that. Anyway, this birthday party was great fun and it had great music. And what was really nice about it was there was a lot of young folk there. So there were a bunch of 18-year-olds there as well. And so they did a lot of the playlist, but it was a lot of old tunes. The one that we all loved, Ceiling Can Hold Us, you know that one where you put your hands up in the air, that one.
Yeah.
Macklemore and Ryan. So that was really good. So I loved that. And I love dancing with your young folk. It's such a really lovely, pleasurable thing to do, isn't it? When they love the same music as you and you can enjoy something together. And kind of, it's a bit of that sort of passing on between the generations, isn't it?
Yeah, so my eldest, who's 19, bought my husband, James, Red Hot Chili Peppers tickets. And they went to, in London, they went to see them together last weekend. And I realised that Under the Bridge and Californication and Other Side, they were all sort of songs that we'd played a lot as she was little, that were part of her life now. And basically, being able to listen to that together while we're pottering around at home, it's really lovely. She came back covered in merchandise. It is so weird to see a 19-year-old wearing a T-shirt with a load of 60-year-old men.
Exactly. It's quite bizarre, isn't it? But I had a similar one where I went to recently, a few weeks ago, they did a Hacienda night at the Royal Albert Hall. And I took Kit, my son, because he loves all that sort of late 80s, early 90s kind of music. And they had obviously the legendary DJ Graham Park there and a really fantastic group called K-Class who did that, you know, Let Me Show You, all of them. And Bez made an appearance on stage with his maracas, and I thought my son was just gonna fall over because he was so excited about it. So that whole kind of, you know, Happy Monday, Step On and a New Order, Blue Monday, those are the kind of tracks that they just like, they can't believe that we were doing this first time round. And it was such a special evening, I have to say. Doing a playlist now, how would you go about that? Because my problem is I'm not very good, can't be asked to put a playlist together.
No.
It's all a bit beyond me. Where do I look for new music? Because there's so much good old music, isn't there?
Well, there is, but there's two places I look for new music. So often I'll if we watch something brilliant on telly, like I May Destroy You, the soundtrack playlist for that was just brilliant. It brought a whole load of new music, and then you can go off down a rabbit hole looking at all of those tunes, as it were. But the other thing that I discovered, which my other daughter brought to me, was the Stranger Things Upside Down playlist. So yeah. In Strange Things, if you've all watched it, to bring Max back, she plays Kate Bush running up that hill, which has now been, I think it's had 57 million global plays and it's number one all around the world. So it's a piece of music that makes you so happy you come into the happy world. So based on your Spotify list, Spotify puts together your How to Defeat Vecna playlist for you. So it throws in all the things that you would. So top of mine, I had a look at what it had put together for mine, was Stevie Nicks' Age of 17.
Oh, yes.
Which
definitely is
so brilliant. Yes. It's so brilliant.
Really good.
It had a lot of Verve and Blur and Sit Down by James. But it was just, again, it had kind of compiled for me a playlist of brilliant songs. That I love and have obviously listened to quite a lot. So that's one of the places I get mine. Mm. Where do you get yours?
Well, I agree with you about the TV soundtracks. I think with all the Netflix, etc. these days, they're much more conscious of it and it's really, really brilliant. And I think the first time I was aware of a really good discovering an artist through a TV show was Michael Kiwanuka on Big Little Lies, you know, Cold Cold Heart. I was like, this song is amazing. And it's just some British guy, you know, on this incredible Hollywood TV series. And then recently on Conversations with Friends, you know, the Sally Rooney, Phoebe Bridgers, she's this new young artist and she happens to be with beautiful songs and she is Paul Mescal's girlfriend, who is was in Normal People, Sally Rooney. Okay. Anyway, there's a connection there. But the other way, I it's a bit old-fashioned but it's still really good, Jules Holland. Jules Holland, he has the most brilliant kind of old new artists. And I discovered this the other week. I was just beside myself. A couple of sisters, they're twin sisters and they're called eBay, but not in the eBay, E-B-A-Y sense. It's spelled I-B-E-Y-I. And they are daughters of one of the Buena Vista Social Club guys. And they're this sort of Venezuelan Cuban twins. They're absolutely stunning and gorgeous. And they have this song. They did this song live called Sister. And it's this sort of like anthem to sisters and the sisterhood. And it was so beautiful. I was just mesmerized and blown away by it. So that was a really good find for me. It felt quite emotional, actually, with my sister. Sent it to my sister, sent the video to my sister. So that was good.
Can we talk about the thing that I bring up a lot?
Oh, put it in my head.
Oh. At the funeral song. Oh, they don't ask this question on Desert Island Disc. What would you have played at your funeral?
Can I first say bravo, because this is all part of your journey, isn't it? To acceptance and not being
death obsessed.
As we talked about the other day, you're getting better with you're not doing your death maths anymore. Well, I think I have maybe mentioned this many moons ago on the podcast, but they haven't changed. So my going in music is The Smiths, There Is a Light That Never Goes Out.
Yeah.
In Ton Truck, etc. And then going out is Atmosphere by Joy Division, because it's so beautiful and so, you know, and I think that might get them all crying, happy crying, maybe. I say them all. I mean, who's going to be there? I don't know.
Just me, mate. Just me. Saying I've got an alibi. I'll be saying to everyone, I wasn't anywhere near her dancing on that balcony. So I had a long thought about it. I'm a big Echo in the Bunny Man.
Oh, yes.
So I think Nothing Lasts Forever would be my going in.
Yeah, like that.
They'd all be crying then.
Yeah.
The banks of celebrities and all the press outside.
Well, you might have 50 million grandchildren because you've got four children. So who knows? That's a lot. You could have a lot.
Yeah, one of them could be prime minister, something like that. And then my going out music has obviously got to be quite upbeat. And then I was thinking, so what is my favourite ABBA song?
Okay, that's a good one.
Super Trooper.
Yeah. Jinx. Brilliant.
That is my favourite song of all.
Do you think you can cry if that song's on? You probably can't cry if that song's on.
No.
Because you're just singing and dancing along.
Yes.
Yeah. I went to one once where they had Always Look on the Bright Side of Life coming out.
Oh,
that was really good as well, because it was sort of that sort of, you know, mixed emotions of laughter and this wonderful person in tears. But there we go.
I did think about the Morecambe and Wise Bring Me Sunshine. That's obviously quite part of everything,
exactly.
Isn't it?
Anyway. Do you think we need to? I think we're going to be asking you guys to help us collate a Postcards from Midlife playlist, aren't we? So we're going to on the Facebook group. So if you put your favourite songs on there that you think are on there, we, at some point when we've got a minute, we might get round to sorting that out, won't
Let's do it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Today's guests are a formidable duo. They are activists, actors, and campaigners raising the voices of midlife women. We're delighted to welcome star of stage and screen, Juliet Stevenson, CBE, and performer, writer, and podcaster, Nikki Clark, to talk about Acting Your Age, the campaign Nikki set up asking the entertainment industry to agree to an equal representation of men and women over the age of 45 on our screens. There is, as we've discussed before on this show, a scandalous lack of positive role models for older women. We seem to become invisible after the age of 45, while parts for mature male characters continue to dominate. Our listeners will know Juliet from her award-winning part in Truly Madly Deeply with Alan Rickman over 30 years ago. She also starred in classics like Mona Lisa's Smile, Emma, and Bend It Like Beckham. She's theatre and TV royalty and was most recently on our screens in ITV's The Long Call, and her new play, The Doctor, will be at the Duke of York Theatre in London from September the 27th. She has two grown-up children, and last year she married her partner of 30 years, the anthropologist Hugh Brody. Meanwhile, Nikki started out as an actor but became a longtime campaigner on equality and equal representation after caring for her mum, who had Alzheimer's, and her two disabled daughters. She also created a series of moving films for The Guardian about living with disability and set up Acting Your Age after her children became more independent and she wanted to return to acting but found there were few roles for women over 50. As Hollywood appears to be getting ready to greenlight more films starring older women, and on the back of the success of Emma Thompson's performance in Good Luck to You, Leo Grand, we'll be chatting to Nikki and Juliet about their own personal midlife experiences and finding out why audiences really are thirsty for stories about women's second act. Welcome to Postcards from Midlife, Nikki and Juliet.
Hello.
Hello, thank you for having us.
So I think we should start by asking how the two of you met.
Well, the first time we met was on Dustbin Baby.
Do you want to explain that to our listeners?
Sure. That was a brilliant drama that was made for BBC. I think it was Kindle. And Juliet was playing Dakota Blue Richards' mum. So what was that, Juliet? 2009, something like that?
Yeah, it's a film about a single woman, unmarried with no children, who takes in this young sort of foster girl who's been, has been in care all her life. So it's about a relationship between a middle-aged woman, me, and this young girl who comes to live with her. And this impossible sort of unlikely relationship blossoms and blooms. And Nikki's daughter was in it. But we met then, and then quite a long time later, wasn't it, Nick? You wrote to me, she made me aware of this campaign that she'd started. And I thought, oh, that's absolutely what's needed and brilliant. And, you know, why haven't we all started this campaign?
As Juliet quite rightly says, she and many, many actresses over the last at least 10 years have been trying to raise the issue and raise awareness of the lack of equality when it comes to actors, male actors and actresses over the age of 45. And the fact that the casting opportunities, so the quality of roles and any roles at all, exponentially falls off a cliff once actresses, women, reach that age. Whereas, of course, careers for men continue for as long as they want them to, I think.
Well, it's so cross-making. It made, like, my midlife rage steams coming out of my ears.
Absolutely.
When I was reading
thing is, so when I saw that Nikki got this a campaign going, I thought, oh, that is exactly what we need, because we've all been raging and steam coming out of our ears. And I thought, well, actually, what we need, as always, is to channel this energy, not into moaning over kitchen tables, but into doing something about it and taking it out into the world. And I sort of joined up on one or two other people I knew, sort of brought in, and then for a while it was sort of low key, and then suddenly, Nikki has been absolutely amazing. She is tireless, she is incredibly efficient, she does not give up, and she keeps on putting this story out. And then just suddenly, like this year, suddenly people have picked it up. We were on Woman's Hour, we were on the Today programme. There's been lots of big articles in the big national broadsheet newspapers. You have invited, you know, suddenly, and also, I think very wisely, Nikki encouraged actors, male actors, to join and say, yeah. Suddenly it seems to be really gaining traction. I'm a great believer in campaigning. You know, I think it's so much better than this sort of destructive energy that goes into complaining and whinging and only talking within your own echo chamber group about how unfair it all is. I like to sort of roll my sleeves up and get going with it. Mm-hmm.
Julia, it's hard to imagine somebody of your status and your calibre and your CV of acting. It's just phenomenal that you have yourself experienced this, the inequality in age and roles and opportunities.
Yes, you know, it's complicated. So I always say in this campaign, I am not campaigning for myself mm-hmm. alone. I am campaigning on several counts. Perhaps the most important count is on behalf of women audiences. I'm campaigning on behalf of women audiences out there who do not see their stories reflected, and we'll talk mm-hmm. about that later. I'm campaigning on behalf of many friends and wonderful colleagues in the industry who are supremely wonderful actresses of all kinds, who work reasonably well until they're 40. And then systematically, it's like driving on a motorway and suddenly you're aware of roadkill, roadkill, roadkill. And there is careers at the side of the road, not moving. And mm-hmm. it's absolutely true. It's terrible. It creates all sorts of tensions within a friendship if you're working and they're not. And there's no justice in it. These are wonderfully, wonderfully talented women. So I'm campaigning primarily on those two counts. But I'm very much also campaigning on behalf of myself. And I know I have had a huge load of luck and that I do play wonderful roles. But I can only tell you that the difference in the roles you play, and I'm talking from a very privileged and lucky point of view, but the roles I played between the age of 20 and 40 were women who had the narrative, who led the story, whose feelings, thoughts, responses shaped that story, and therefore whose sensibility and outlook on the world and experience was a huge part of that story that audiences received. After that age, you're very often playing somebody's wife, somebody's secretary, mm-hmm. somebody's annoying grandmother or wonderful grandmother, or you're carrying a tray and an apron, you're domestic, whatever you are very often marginal. I have so mm-hmm. often, I've done wonderful jobs, endlessly playing wives to, you know, Jim Broadbent, Timothy Spall, wonderful actors, all older than me, you know. No, Tim and I are the same age, we were at RADA together, and I'm very happy to do that in a way, but it does mean that no longer, you know, it's actually quite boring, you know, it's quite boring. You think, I've got to wait here and shape myself into the sort of wife that I think your character might need to have, and that's fine too. But what it means is that as I get older and have more and more experience, you know, I've known a lot of grief, I've known a lot of joy, I've had lots of children, I've been out in the world, I've learned a lot more about myself, I've engaged, you know, I've worked for lots of charities, I've traveled, you know, I'm just a grown up now in many ways, and I can't channel a lot of that into the work mm-hmm. because there isn't the opportunity for it.
And you started the campaign 4 years ago, Nikki, and then you almost gave up though, didn't you? Because there was a sort of lackluster response. But as you were about to give up, lots of actors, male and female, said, don't, we will join. Were they telling you personal stories, the absolute need for this?
So many. So since I started, as you say, in 18 now.
Yeah.
And it was something that I was noticing, because I think one of the things to add is the fact that there is no such thing as women returning to this industry, because you'd try and re-enter as I did at 50. It's just ludicrous. There's just absolutely no opportunity. There is for younger talent, obviously, but when a woman, like, for example, in my case, when your life goes in a completely different direction and then you want to be able to bring that life experience back into a career once your responsibilities, so caring responsibilities in my case, ease, that's just not feasible because you are past it. You are shelved. You are ridiculous for even wanting to do it. So I began to notice very graphically, once this became very acute for me, that I couldn't restart my career. I was thinking, well, where are the women of my age then? Let me, you know, maybe I'm just misunderstanding this. Maybe it's just something that I have to accept. And I looked around and I saw that there were so many male actors of my age, and they were so often paired with women decades younger. And I was thinking, but that doesn't reflect my life experience. My husband and I are roughly the same age. You know, all my friends, partners are all roughly the same age. I mean, why is it every screen couple I see, he is a wonderful, well-rounded go-getter. He's often a spy or he's a diplomat.
Tom Cruise. Oh,
yeah. You know, yes, and they are not yes. only playing their age, they're allowed to look their age as well. And yet, where are the female equivalents? Where are the wonderful actresses like Juliet that I would love to see leading on a drama that is, or a comedy, because we don't have women over the age of 45 leading any of our comedies. So I started to look at it. And the thing about any campaign like this is you need that data. So I started mining all of the data that I could access. And as soon as the first article went up, which was in The Guardian 4 years ago, I was inundated with contacts from actors, actresses, and writers all saying, yeah. Oh, God, thankfully, good. There's an actual campaign that we can get behind. Our experiences are, as Juliet quite rightly says, that the castings, the lead castings, the crucial roles where the woman over a particular age is the protagonist leading the story forward, it's just nowhere. You know, so often stereotypical bigoted roles, secondary roles, the woman who's causing everybody misery or telling everyone to be careful, these are the only opportunities left for women for whom retirement isn't realistic at 45. In what other profession with that wealth of experience are women expected just to retire, and not only to retire, but to do so happily? And so I felt I had no choice but to try and keep making some noise.
I had Georgia Pritchett on the show, who wrote, was one of the writers of Succession. So you know Jerry in Succession.
Yeah.
When it was originally put together, Jerry was a man.
Right.
And it was only Georgia and two other midlife writers who said, if you do that, you will have so many scenes where there are only men in the room. Let's make it a woman. But let's make it a woman. And then it was almost created as a kind of slightly maternal. She would be the woman they turned to. And Georgia and the team said, no, let's make her like the men.
Yeah.
Let's make her sexy. Let's make her, you know, do these different things from what we see on screen. But they're not different things from what actually happen in life. And that's the issue, isn't it?
This campaign is not just about, you know, actors who need to be working and who aren't working or aren't working in the way they'd like to. This is of huge importance to everyone, because what is drama? Drama is what we do to, you know, to hold a mirror up to the world, we're living in right now, in this historical moment, in this part of the world, you know, and whether that's theatre, cinema, films being streamed or series, what we're doing is showing the world, revealing the world back to itself. And we're doing that hopefully with some capacity to explore why people are the way they are, why they do what they do and say what they say, and why we're in the mess that we're in, or why we're in the joy that we're in, or whatever. If that, all that holding up of a mirror is always a male experience, if it's always shaped by male values, male views of the world, even though those of course differ hugely, I'm not generalizing that men sit, you know, of course there's a huge spectrum within the male view of the world, but nevertheless, if we're only ever doing that, what are we doing? You know, why are women not only is most of the world run by men, but most of the interpretation of the world's events and humanity is being shaped by men's sensibilities, men's thinking, men's interpretations as well. So, I mean, that's why I think it's really, really important. And if you recognize that we are not, you know, women of my age aren't working as actors, and Nikki's age are not working as actors very much, because the roles aren't there, then that's clearly that women of our age and experience are not getting their stories or their view of the world told. And therefore, those members of the audience who are women, which we're told represents the majority, you know, over 40 and women is the big demographic that watches this stuff, they're not seeing their own experiences reflected either. Mm. So it's a big issue.
Yeah, and it comes back to the writing, doesn't it, and the writers. So there's clearly, for female writers, perhaps there aren't those opportunities. But we did notice that Landline Pictures was created in the US to help find and produce more stories specifically about women in midlife, like Book Club, Otherhood and One Eater. And they've made money. They make money, these films, don't they? So the potential is there. In terms of roles that have been good for midlife women and older, have you played any, Juliet? Nikki, what ones do you think have been really good that we should be looking to?
Well, for me, the really interesting change is starting to come in from the US, which I didn't expect, I'll be honest. Mm-hmm. So we have sort of European cinema and television, which already appreciates women of all ages. And now this move is coming from the US, and we are still in the UK. We are sandwiched in the middle with this clinging to the 16 to 34 demographic. And that is a false economy, as you say. MRC, the parent company that approached Amy Baer from Landline Pictures, had surveyed all of the streamers and all of the broadcasters in the US, the networks, and they said to them, which demographics are being missed out? And without exception, they all said audiences over the age of 50, because they're just not seeing themselves. And we have time and loyalty and disposable income, and we choose, you know, what we will watch and what we won't. And in the UK, with terrestrial television, again, still clinging to this demographic, they're failing to appreciate two very important things. The sections of the audience that are excluded, but also the fact that younger people aren't bigoted in the way that seemingly many commissioners are when it comes to older women. As you mentioned Succession earlier, the last episode of Succession was the top trending topic on Tumblr, a platform which is not known for middle-aged people. But as Amy Baer from Landline Pictures says, you know, the reason they're doing this, they're a business. It, she says, ignoring the demographic of older audiences is just leaving money on the table. So there's
yes.
a financial imperative too.
That's right. And I think the thing is that one of the answers to your question is, I think, where can you point to good examples? In the States, maybe why it's coming from the States is because they have this massive star system. When you get Meryl Streep and you get Glenn Close or whatever, you get a few female stars who get through that narrow sieve of 45 or whatever it is, and they go on to become huge stars. And the reason that we name them is because there are very, very few of them. We wouldn't sit here and try and name all the A-listers in Hollywood who are men over 50, because, you know, it would take up the whole hour.
All day.
But we talk about the Meryl Streep, we talk about Helen Mirren, and you think, oh, those poor, you know, those poor girls, they're so exhausted. They never stop working. They have to carry the can for every woman over 50. It's very exhausting for them, but let's give them a night off. Let's let other people do it. But you get Meryl Streep. And of course, you know, she's massive box office. She's genius. She's a wonderful, wonderful actress. People want to see her. There'll be a whole bunch of people in a room creating Meryl's next vehicle, and they'll be ransacking books and what can we adapt? What can we? So that's partly. So they will get a great role for Meryl Streep because they want her on screen, because it's going to make a lot of money. We don't have that level of stardom here. But here's two really good examples to be positive. I'm about to go into the West End with a fantastic play, which was a huge hit at the Almeida. We were about to take into the West End and to Broadway when lockdown struck. It's a play written in 1900 by Schnitzler, who was a Viennese writer. Rob Icke, age 34, my great friend and collaborator, sort of fantastic director. He also writes everything he does. He took this play, and the central role is a man. It's a man who has this huge experience, which becomes a huge conundrum. And he is the very center of the play. And gradually he gets his whole life and career are destroyed by a small event, which people take exception to. It's a phenomenal play about now, about cancel culture, identity politics, about the power of social media to destroy. It's a man. And what did Rob do? He said, there's no reason at all why this is a man. You know, this was written in 1900, of course. So, but it could be a woman. I'm going to write it for Juliet. It's happened again with a director I loved working with, a young, brilliant young television director. He was doing a series, and it was all about what happened to a mayor of an Austrian town during the Second World War. And he suddenly thought, why has this mayor got to be a guy? I think the first question that writers could ask is, why have I made this character a man? Look into the world. Yeah. The world is full of men and women in powerful positions. Why has this character got to be male? If it can be female, why has it got to be a female under the age of 35? Well, you endlessly hear from women writers who do write older characters that their execs will come back to them and say, the executive producers will come back and say, yeah, we love the script, well done, let's keep going. Could you please make those female characters 20 years younger than you've written them? We don't want them 55, we want them 35. There are many stories like that. And that female writer will either say no and fight it out and risk losing her job or her position, or she'll say, I better do what they want because I want the next contract. And they've got to say yes because they're my bosses. And so, you know, she will.
The tide is turning. I mean, we are getting more representation of women. We've just interviewed Katie Brand, who wrote Good Luck to You, Leo Grand as well. So we are seeing these women. I guess you'd call them midlife coming of age plots. That's what we need, isn't it? So we need more women talking about it as well. So there's stuff to write about. We ask all our guests about their midlife, their kind of over 40, over 45 times, because it's a huge time of change and learning and awakening or unraveling as well has happened. Nikki, talk us through your midlife.
My caring life was very, very tricky. So to be completely honest with you, anything outside of that, when you're caring for two disabled children and a mum with Alzheimer's, and you're fighting and fighting and fighting, which I think kind of fighting institutions defined my life from my mid-30s through to quite recently, really, and it's ongoing. Maybe that challenging of institutions might have been why I was able to sort of put a lot of that energy into challenging the status quo when it comes to female representation over the age of 45. I don't know. No menopause is easy. I'm not going to even begin to pretend. And I think we do a disservice to women who struggle desperately in that change, especially around that menopause and the physical things that are happening to your body. But I think one of the biggest difficulties for me is the change that happens to you psychologically. As soon as you are branded to have reached an age and a stage where you are redundant, where you're non-viable, where no one's interested in what you have to say or what you're doing or your creativity or any of those aspects, as soon as we have this very narrow definition for women, we have to ask ourselves why. What's wrong with having grey hair as we grow older? Why are we bombarded? You know, I was watching a Harry Potter film. Every single ad break was anti-aging cream. And you're thinking, this is a film for children. And probably their mums would be mid-30s and they are being bombarded. Women are bombarded constantly with being told why we don't work, why we're broken, why we're failing because we're aging.
How was your midlife, Juliet? What have you learned over the last 10, 15 years?
So much. I think this is a really fascinating conversation. I'd say I was very depressed when I turned 40. I was in despair when I turned 50. My 50s, and I've got to say, all you women out there who are heading for your 50s or just starting them, nobody told me this, and it took me completely by surprise. Your 50s are the most fantastic decade. Yeah. Because finally, you know, I took a long time. And I mean, I was lucky work-wise very, very early on from my earliest 20s. But I didn't know who I was for a long time, you know, and I think it took me a long time. And as a young woman, you're growing up constantly in a patriarchal world where you're constantly judging yourself along those values and you're feeling inadequate. I did anyway for a long, long time. I was always working with male directors and anyway, I just grew up not with, with lots of lack of confidence in quite a lot of areas of my life. When I hit 50, suddenly, you know, I'd had all my children, I'd brought them up, they touch wood, you know, everything was okay. I suddenly just stopped questioning myself. I didn't stop questioning the world, that would be boring, but I had confidence, I had a lot of experience. I didn't really care nearly so much what people thought about what I said or did. I thought, this is what I believe, this is what I want, this is what I'm going to pour my energy into, like it or not, here I come. And that kind of, the freedom from caring what the world thinks about you, what they're going to say about you is so liberating. And that liberation gives you tons of energy. And I felt confident on stage, confident on camera. So that was all fantastic and joyous. And I would say, as somebody now in her 60s, you know, that continues. I know my time is limited. It won't go on forever. But on the other hand, and this is, you know, a different kind of truth, of course, the loss of youth for a woman is heartbreaking. You know, I look in the mirror and I'm so shocked by what I see. And when I watch myself on film, I literally sometimes cry and I think, do I really look like that? Older age can make you look severe. The world sees a woman who's my age, but inside, I just am not that age. So there's this weird breach between who you feel yourself internally and how the world perceives you externally. That breach, that gap, is sometimes really painful to have to negotiate as professionally and personally. It's very weird walking around the world completely invisible. There are a whole lot of very strange contradictions that you have to reconcile yourself to. And I would say to women, seize your 50s and 60s and your 40s. Don't go into sort of Don't compare yourself to the younger you. Don't feel it as a loss. Feel it as a gain. Enjoy your gains, you know. Enjoy whatever life has given you in terms of experience and freedom and confidence. Give less of a shit about what people think. Go for what you need and what you think is important. Be true to yourself. Do that with the freedom that age affords you.
Well, we totally agree with that. We talk about it being the magnificent midlife, and we're both in our mid-50s. I'm slightly further on.
Slightly older.
But totally agree about that, just sort of throwing off all the cares about just not giving a stuff about what anybody thinks. It is so liberating. And have you felt that as well, Nikki?
Yeah, again, I think because of my caring years and because when you're a family carer, you're often the only non-professional in a room. I think I made a decision quite early on as a woman to sort of say, actually, what I have to say, I have a wealth of experience. You know, I have an input that I can make. And so I think that sort of transitioned over as I got older. But I definitely think that Juliet is so right. There is something quite magical, actually, that happens in your 50s that you kind of, you dread, as she said, you dread your 40s, this big, great big number that is just like, we have constantly been told, that's when everything will end, that's when you are pointless. And then you sort of get through the 40s and you think, actually, I'm going to spend my early 40s kind of looking back on my 30s, or am I just going to enjoy my 40s? By the time you get into your 50s, you just think, fuck it. When am I going to be able to speak up? If I still stand back and wait and ask permission to talk about the things that matter and talk about the things that are relevant to me as a woman, I'm never going to be picked. There is always going to be somebody else. There's always going to be a man with an issue that I don't think is as important that is going to be given my spot. So if not now, when? And there is that beautiful liberation in your 50s that happens. And it does. Something does just kick in. And you say, you know what? I love the younger women that I know in my life, and I really love the older women that I know in my life. And I think we can all coexist very, very happily with nobody having to take precedence. And if it's a patriarchal staple that we're supposed to condemn younger women and dread being older women, then that's not something I'm going to ever buy into.
You know, here we are talking about age, and it's a crucial conversation and really important, and I welcome it wholeheartedly. It's also true to say that, in a way, I don't experience my age as a huge, significant factor. I've been alive on the planet for 60-something years. I have, in some areas of my life, just the same energy as I had when I was 5 years old. I still get just as much joy as when I was 8 of jumping off a big rock or splashing in the sea or throwing a tennis ball on a beach. My message to the women out there over 45, 50, don't feel you've got to behave in a certain way because of your age. Who says? Who says age is the thing that defines you most? It's one of a multitude of things that define you. Don't be in the gaze of the world all the time. Be in your own gaze. You know, if you want to do something daft and crazy, if you want to wear a skirt above your knees, whatever it is, be the age you choose to be. You know, I mean, you can be, we carry all our ages with us. I don't think we lose them. You move on from being 6 and 16 and 46, but you're still those women. They're just inside you. You just accumulate more.
You have done something rather lovely in your, well, I think in the last year, actually, you've done it. You finally got married, didn't you, Juliet?
Yeah,
I did. And I'm intrigued by a later life marriage. What do you wear for something like that? Because I was thinking, oh, that'd be lovely wearing
I see. Yeah.
And how does it feel being married after 30 years of not being married?
Well, you know, it's funny. I mean, I feel slightly shy because, you know, I always thought, no, marriage is a patriarchal institution. You know, women don't need it. Why do we need it? And all the rest of it. Well, and also I thought, no man is, I'm never going to take anybody else's name. How absurd, how old fashioned. I haven't taken his name, of course. But I think I come from a generation who didn't want to conform, you know, who just wanted to break the rules and say, the rules have not suited women. They haven't suited, if you're a certain kind of person in the world, I don't want these conventions. I don't, you know, I don't like them. I don't want them. And then, but as the years have gone on and we had our children and they've grown up and everything, you think, I don't quite know what I'm sort of fussing about anymore. When marriage as an institution embraced same-sex marriage, when same-sex marriage became legal and this country recognized that a man can marry a man or a woman can marry a woman, I thought, okay, good. This institution has finally taken a long, hard look at itself and said, we have to change. So I can change too. If this institution has said that, then I'm okay with it. I can make my peace with it, you know, because and then, you know, that tax man is going to take everything from us if we don't marry, which is ridiculous and desperately needs to be changed. It's not like that in many other countries in the world. But since that is the stupid situation, so it was partly that, but it was partly that, you know, I'm very proud of having a relationship that's lasted 30 years. And I don't say that sort of arrogantly. I say it because one of the most precious things I've learned in my life is what it is to love someone through thick and thin.
Yeah.
You know, through tragedy, loss, difficulty, anger, and to love them and to learn what love is and how tough it needs to be and how incredible it is when love sees you through very difficult times and you emerge and you just, not only do you still love each other, but you love each other more, with more knowledge, with more depth, with more durability. And that's been one of, if not the most extraordinary, you know, experiences of my life. And I thought, I now would like to stand up and say, this is my person. Aww. This is the person I'm doing this with, you know, and I love him, if anything, more. more and more as that knowledge develops and goes on. And so, yeah. As for the ceremony itself, it was in a really tiny little registry office in Woodbridge in Suffolk, next to a funeral parlour. I said to my daughter, I'm not going to get a dress. She said, you are joking. So one of the great joys of doing it older is that she dragged me and we went off and she bought a dress that, of course, she could borrow later, of course.
Smart daughter move. Very good. Very good.
It was low key, but it was lovely.
Oh, how wonderful. And Nikki, could we just talk for a moment about the work you do championing disability rights? You know, a lot of our listeners will be caring as well for children with learning needs and also parents with Alzheimer's. It's that critical age, isn't it? We're all kind of looking towards that with our own parents. What advice would you have for anybody who is in a situation now with concerns about caring?
I think there are two main pieces of advice that I'd give to anybody, and I shudder to do it, but you have asked me, so I will. Mm-hmm. The two pieces of advice are, please recognise that you are a carer. You know, oftentimes people will be like, no, that's not me. No, I just help out. Now, that can be a neighbour, that can be a friend, that can be a partner, that can be a child or a parent. But oftentimes we are very shy about saying, I am a carer, because it's almost as though we are claiming something that we're not entitled to. Just recognise that. Because as soon as you do, you start to recognise that you have a requirement and a need. And that's the next piece of advice, which is that requirement and that need is to make time for yourself. Because we as carers, family carers particularly, we put ourselves at the very bottom of the list, and yet we are the glue. And again, because my caring duties have diminished now and they are less than they were, I can say this, we are the glue. And oftentimes we are managing many, many carers, predominantly women, but of course there are men who are carers too, full-time jobs, other family members who have needs, your own health, your own responsibilities. So that glue will not remain as crucial if you don't take time for yourself. And that can be an hour a day, 10 minutes a day, whatever it is, you deserve it and you need it. So those are my two main pieces of advice, really. And also, you know, if I can make a request, it's for better recognition for family carers. Because again, family carers don't receive either the financial recognition that they deserve or, I'm afraid, societal recognition. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, billions is saved to the Treasury. I'm not going to make this political, but billions is saved to the Treasury of every government by the work of family carers and by the fact that that is picked up. So those are my two pieces of advice.
Very helpful.
You two are just brilliant. We love this campaign. So before we go, what can our listeners do? So Trish and I are going to write a midlife coming of age story, I think, now. We're just going to do it, aren't we?
Yes, only women. So much material to mine there, isn't it? Just from what you guys have said to us today.
Yeah.
But before we go, what can our listeners do to help? How can we help the Acting Your Age campaign?
From my perspective, sharing the news, I mean, it's so brilliant. And thank you so much for having us on your show, because that is, you know, one of the things, it's getting the word out there. For middle-aged women listening, I would say that one of the things we're terrible at is recognizing perhaps discrimination that targets us as a demographic. They did some research at Ofcom and it came out of Wales, and they noticed that middle-aged women are brilliant at seeing lack of representation or bigotry or discrimination affecting other groups, but we are very bad as middle-aged women of saying, actually, we don't get that. We get a lot of ageism, we don't get representation, and we get a lot of discrimination. So become better at recognising that you have a right to say, this is what I like and what I need. I'd say to commissioners out there, please stop ageing down the female characters and their romantic partners. You know, middle-aged men and middle-aged women on screen have exciting, vibrant stories to tell. Make more middle-aged women the leads, again, if you're a commissioner or a writer. And please stop making every story to do with middle-aged and older women about them suffering health crises. Many of us are, but we don't want to hear it. We don't want
to. It's not entertainment, is it?
It's not entertainment. Make us assassin spies. Make us beautiful subjects as Juliet's new story that's coming up. And remember that the two women who created the vaccine for COVID were middle-aged women. Mm-hmm. So this is a time in life when you're really achieving. And that's
and we should be calling it out. When we see it and it's wrong, let's all call it out, right?
That would be my request. Yeah. I mean, I think what Nikki said, it's very interesting because I think people don't even notice. You know, I think that this sexism and ageism is so deeply ingrained that people don't even notice it. Mm-hmm. So start noticing it. Start looking at it. Turn on your telly and just notice how many middle-aged women are appearing in those stories, and write to commissioners, write to the BBC, write to the ITV, write, you know, if you can be bothered, notice it or comment on it on social media. Just start noticing it and call it out.
So here's to the positive, brilliant, uplifting stories of midlife women that we will all be reading about and seeing next year. Thank you very much, Juliet and Nikki.
Thank you so much for having us. Really, thank you.
More music, Trish. I'm sticking to the theme. We are at nostalgia.
Okay. Is it Name That Tune?
It's Name the Year, and I'm going to put this year to rest, which might give you a clue asking about it.
Can I say it now?
No. Right. So this is the year disco was born. Earth, Wind and Fire were huge.
Let's Groove Tonight.
Let's Groove Tonight. Okay. It's the year ABBA had their biggest selling albums.
Mm-hmm.
What about that, eh? And it's the year Elton John got his waxwork at Madame Tussauds.
Oh, well, that's important. I wonder if it's been updated since. I'm sure it must
have. I don't know. What, new wig? Something like that. Well, can I say that?
New glasses, new platforms.
Hotel California was at number one. It was the big hit of the summer. And I settled in Cornwall because we'd moved back and forth for a bit.
Yes,
that's
okay.
Got to mention Cornwall. Should have mentioned it with Tori Amos earlier.
You did mention it with Joe Wiley, so you're okay.
Oh, good. You've already got a couple of mentions in there.
Yeah.
The Queen, listen to this, sent her first email in this year.
Really? Now that would
some Wikipedia thing because Apple Inc. started this year as well.
Okay, I don't believe that. I think some Wikipedia person's just made that up to confuse and fool people, fools like us.
Do you want to guess it then?
I'm just going to say 1976.
Yes. Because it's the year I say every time. Was it that year in the really hot summer? Yeah.
So next week I'm going to challenge you and see if you don't say 1976.
Well, I don't need to say it now because we've nailed it.
Well, I don't know. I might trick you.
1976 again. Do it again.
That's I might double bluff you.
All right, Marion.
That brings us to the end of this week's Postcards from Midlife. New episodes are available to listen to every Sunday on your podcast provider, and we would really appreciate it if you can make sure to download your episodes so they count on our listener numbers. And if you could rate and review us too, that would be really, really helpful. And don't forget, if you want to register your interest and find out more about our live show next May, go to postcardsfrommidlifelive.com.
And please tell your friends about the show and about our podcast. We want as many women as possible to join in the midlife conversation, which is what our private Facebook group is all about. So I'll hop on over there and join up. You do have to answer some questions to join up, and if you don't answer them, then we can't let you in, and you do have to be female. Quite a lot of men try and join up recently. Come and join the chat there.
Yes, and you can use it to post any feedback on the topics we discuss, as well as suggestions for other things you'd like to hear talked about, or celebrities and experts you'd love to hear interviewed, or who you'd like to see at our live show. And of course, you can email us at hello@postcardsfrommidlife.com or pop a little message on Instagram. Goodbye.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.